This podcast is supported by The Real Real.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Welcome to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey, the Roundtable Edition. I'm your host, Ruth Castle, and I'm glad to be here with you. Whether you're turning a moment of calm or right in the middle of chaos, this space is made for you. Today, I am joined by an incredible group of dads. Dads raising children on the spectrum. We are not perfect. We are here to be real, all, and rooted in love. And as always, I want you to know this. You're not alone. This is your autism journey, and we will walk it together. Let's dive in. Thank you guys for all being here today. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. James, thank you for being here. Mark, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And I want to give a thanks to my husband, Justin, for being here. So, guys, I wanted to have you guys on because, you know, I feel like sometimes the dads are overlooked, and maybe not overlooked, you guys are busy. You guys take on a different role than us mothers. Sometimes you guys are the sole providers because the mom has to step back, and realizing, you know, that you're taking on more of that role. Sometimes, you know, in our lifestyle, there's more two homes having two incomes. So it definitely takes a hit on that. So I wanted to bring that to the forefront and know that you guys are recognized and you are appreciated. And I know I love you for doing all the things you do. And, you know, I can't speak for your wives, but I can say that you are appreciated. So this is why I felt like it was so important to have the dads on the round table.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Mm-hmm. Important conversation, I think, we need to have.
I think so, too, because dads, I don't feel like they feel like they have a place, you know, to be able to talk about some of the things. So they kind of keep it in to themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because recently, I wonder if, I know it's Autism Awareness Month, but I find myself kind of opening with that, meaning in relationships at work or people I meet, somewhere at the beginning of the conversation, I mentioned that I have a son with autism, where I didn't used to do that. And the weird balance of that was, I'm like, what, am I doing it too much? But it's, you know, I'm not doing it to get attention or to steer the conversation to me or empathy. I'm just saying, hey, this is my life. nice to meet you. And, you know, if we're going to have a conversation about me and my daily going on, it just comes up. But then I've been wondering lately, am I doing it too much? You can really kind of get in your own head.
Yeah.
Sometimes. When you're mentioning your family and,
right.
You know, and kind of what your day-to-day is.
I do the same thing. And I have other kids. So it's sort of like, you know, sometimes I wonder, like, you know, am I singling out one kid? You know, it's just that, like, the one kid requires so much work, so much effort, you know.
Yeah.
That one kid requires so much time and everything. So I'm always in a battle of, am I leaving the other ones behind? Am I, like, not showing them, you know, attention?
Yeah.
You know, because one needs so much work. So, like you said, but I do, though. I mean, you know, I have my son on my phone, and I show people. I'm like, hey, you know, it's my son, or he does this, he does that. Anyone who knows me knows that. Anyone who knows me knows really all my kids.
Right.
You know, I talk about all of them.
But
you're right, though. It does come up in a lot of conversations.
Sure.
You know, it does. And sometimes I have to catch myself. I'm like, am I talking about it too much? Like, you know, someone else is just being polite, so they're listening to me. But I'm like, they probably don't give a, you know. But
I wonder that, too, sometimes.
Right.
You can drive yourself crazy wondering what they think, because either they'll use that to ask more questions, and that's the reason I do like doing it.
So right.
Potentially raise awareness or answer questions.
But, right.
You know. But then sometimes if you don't get a response, you're like, well, really?
Right.
You have no follow-up question for me? But
all right.
Nowadays, it is nice. A lot of the stigma around special needs has kind of gone away.
Right.
People are a lot more aware of because the numbers have kept growing
right.
over the years. So more and more people every day have been exposed to someone, a friend, a family member with some sort of special needs or autism. So that stigma has kind of gone away, and you can start to talk about it more.
Right.
And people are a lot more understanding nowadays than they were, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
It was kind of an unknown, you know, what is it?
Right.
But now people are a lot more aware and have been exposed to it. So it's a lot more comfortable to talk to people or bring it up.
Well, you know,
in conversations.
Bring up a good point, because I watched my wife, you know, it'd be the air conditioning repair person, and they said, now she's in a conversation. And then they're asking her for information. I'm like, how did you even get to that point?
Yeah. I don't know anything about that.
I don't know either.
I've never been there.
But I have noticed, and now that you say that, when I've had conversations, and they're not all, you know, me waiting on people to respond, a lot of the feedback has been, oh, yeah, so is my son, or so is my daughter, or
mm-hmm.
so is my brother's kid, or my sister's kid. And like you said, you know, people will know someone, or it might be in their own family.
Right. And it raises, or it starts all kinds of new conversations.
Yeah.
You know, how's yours, you know, and the back and forth, because it's such a broad range of, you know, and even people that don't know somebody are starting to become more curious about it and more inquisitive in a good way. You know, what's that like? How's that different from another kid? And you can just talk openly with them about that nowadays.
Right.
You know, you can explain, you know, the ups and downs, the joys and the hardships of it.
Yeah. Have you felt freer to do that? Have you always felt?
I always do what I want.
Hey, man. Thanks, Dad.
That's why we're similar that way.
I've never been wanting to be afraid to say what's on my mind or mince words. I've never had the patience.
That's a good word. That's right. I've had the patience.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to beat around the bush. It's just. Sure.
It's been more of a journey for me, I think, the last few years. But we're openly talking about it. Not that I just didn't bring it up, I think, earlier on, because I was just kind of like, all right, my life, my business, type of thing. But I never shied away from it if it came up inadvertently. How are you all doing, raising a child with autism? But I think recently it's been a little bit more free too. And I don't know if that's part of a journey of self-acceptance of, this is your life, this is your son's journey, and what are you going to do about it to help contribute to his life? Maybe from that standpoint, it's opened me up a little bit. Just kind of saying, what is this journey going to be? And it's a balance for me, so it's hard to say, let's just have him enjoy today. But sometimes my mind leaps to, when he's 21, what does that look like? And do I have things set up for him?
Yeah, that's the part that scares me.
So that's great. Thinking like that leads us into some more points that I would like for you guys to cover today.
Sure.
So what was your initial reaction when your child was diagnosed? Is the first part of it. And then how was your perspective of, we all have an image of what our child is going to be like before we're born even. How did that change? How did it evolve over time after the diagnosis?
That's a great question.
I know for me, it was kind of a surprise. Even when, we found out we were going to have a son. Trying to figure all that out. And then when we got to the point where he was diagnosed, I was still kind of at the stage where, as a brand new dad, having trouble, figuring out, how to dad. I don't know if it didn't really bother me. It just changed my perspective on, what do I have to do in addition to the things I had already planned on? It didn't change anything about, our relationship or my relationship with him. It was just, now what things need to happen in the future? What else do we have to figure out? And what are the best steps to most effectively help him? It's been a journey. It's been lots of changes.
Yeah.
And going through what works, what doesn't. A lot of him and his personality is our personality, which
it's not.
Not
sure if it helps. Because we've done a lot of work on ourselves.
He's got the same stubborn.
That's important though, because I know I'm a work in progress. So is my wife. I think I have a similar answer to you. I think you hit the nail on the head. Where I was like, the initial surprise was having him, because we were older parents. I was 40 years old, and didn't know what that part of the journey would be, but also knew, it's now or never. So when we found out Kaneko was pregnant, I was like, wow. And then found out it was going to be a boy. And so then, the whole world is in your mind of, what's his entire future? every time we went to the doctors, they would throw around this word high risk. And I'm like, what does that mean? So then I had my own fears just of getting through a healthy pregnancy. That healthy baby boy, he was born. So now, again, the whole world's ahead of him, right, in my mind, and just going to work. And, all right, he'll grow, and he'll start talking. And, you know, I think I had the dad book of the milestones. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, you know, Kanika's noticing maybe some of these milestones aren't met. I don't know. I probably was more oblivious to it. Because she was the one who discovered that he even needed glasses. Like, she was just attuned to things.
Oh, okay.
I remember coming in, I think, when he was under two, or waving goodbye, or waving, and he would wave.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right. And then all of a sudden, some of these things that he was doing, including the babbling, stopped. And, you know, that's where we started to take a deeper dive, probably around age one and a half, to get the diagnosis. And then maybe like you, I don't know, there was this fear or worry or overwhelming concern. It was just, you know, the love is there, beautiful baby boy. You go in public, like I'm sure you all, and people say how beautiful the baby is. So all that was there, but it was just a mind jump of, you know. The biggest lesson I had was I'm a big person watching movies and TV. That's how we see all the Rocky movies and all the Star Wars movies and stuff. I saw a Rocky movie, it was a spinoff, Creed.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize I was this person until Rocky said to the young boxer that he was training, it was Adonis Creed, it was Apollo Creed's son.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in the movie, Adonis Creed was just kind of feeling bad for himself. He just had the daughter, and his daughter was deaf. And he was like moping around and saying, oh, she's deaf. And Rocky goes, listen, you got a beautiful young daughter there. She's healthy. She's happy. She's not feeling sorry for herself, so nor should you. She's going to need you. She's going to go through, overcome any challenges, and live her life through who she is now and her experiences. And I don't know why I had to be in the Rocky movie for that to be a lesson for me. I was like, am I feeling sorry for myself deep down without sharing it with anybody? It's not about me. And my son, Jay, who's 7 now, he's not running around feeling sorry for himself or saying, hey, I have challenges though, where he's just waking up and he's hungry and he wants juice, or I'll get juice as I hear it pour on the floor in the fridge. You know, what are you doing in there?
I know that.
And he wants his tablet and he wants what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
His love and affection. And that's his world. That Rocky movie, I was like, I need to see things through his lens. He's happy. He's healthy. I wish I could get into his mind.
Right.
But he, okay, I want this, I want him to do this. You know, today he was like Sky Zone, you know. So he's living his life.
Right.
And that took a few years for me to kind of get there. Like, he's living his life.
So, right, exactly.
It's about him and how he's perceiving the world. So now I'm trying to navigate that. I'm still trying to figure that out. Better than I was, but there's still...
Yeah, they can show you a lot about your life. How we figured it out. I mean, my situation was like more chaotic, because Noah he's the youngest of all of the siblings. So, you know, they're all pretty close together in age, and you know, everyone's, you know, sort of running around. Kind of like a little bit of a backstory. I watched the podcast, you know, about the birth and C-section, and my wife had C-section for all of them. The way it worked was that the first one was complications.
How many again?
Five. So yeah, so she had C-section for all five, and his wasn't complicated or anything like that. And you know, I remember, you know, they always. There isn't any marker for it, but I remember the doctors always offer you that test if you want to know if the child's going to have, I think it's Down syndrome or something like that. And so we said no, because it didn't matter, you know, whatever the child, whatever you come out. I don't know. I kind of always knew that he was going to be different. I don't know if that makes sense. I just kind of always knew that. It's sort of like the way you know, like, if you're going to have a bad day today, it hasn't started yet, but you're like, I know today's going to be bad. But I know I always knew that he was maybe going to be different. And my wife, she was better. She saw the signs a little earlier than I did. Like, he, physically, I think he hit all his milestones. But he was around two. And the first inclination was he wouldn't look you in the face, like he wouldn't look you in the eyes. So it was no direct contact. But the biggest thing was he wouldn't respond to his name. And so after a while, we were like, okay, we have to get him tested. We went to early steps. We went to early steps, and by the time we got to early steps, he was about 2.5. Early steps goes up to 3 years old, I think. Or at least they did it that time. And it was profound for him. You know, they told us right away. They said it was profound. And it was sort of like, it was like a 1 minute shock. Like it was just a shock. And then I was just like, okay, well, he's profound, you know. All right. Because he wouldn't respond to his name, and he didn't respond to sounds properly. I noticed that. Like, let's say if a book fell to the floor right next to you, normal person kind of shocked and they kind of look over, but he would be where it would be as if he was deaf. So he would have no reaction. Or he could be riding in a car. Like, I remember one time we were riding in a car and like this loud motorcycle came by, you know, like roaring by the side of the car. And he was just, he was beside himself. So he would respond to certain noises and not to others. We went through a whole long process of all the hearing tests. I don't know if anyone else went through those. Yes. But the problem with the hearing tests is that they all require the person to interact with the instructor. So, you know, you've got the thing going off behind you and you're supposed to look and you're supposed to, long story short, all the hearing tests were inconclusive. And also early steps, kind of backtrack a little bit. Early steps gave us their best therapist because they said, he's very profound. We're going to give you a therapist. The therapist only went for 6 months because you age out of early steps at 3 years old. But I kept her on after that for a while. But we went through all the hearing tests that they had in Pinellas County, and they were all inconclusive because he's not going to interact with the instructor. Yeah, he's going to respond to certain things and not to other things. So we didn't know if he actually could hear or how well he could hear. There was an issue where he had to have the ear tubes for one time, you know, water in his ear. So then the doctors were thinking, well, maybe he can't talk because if everything you're hearing is like underwater, and so everything now is jumbled. So maybe if he's hearing everything jumbled, then that's the reason why he can't talk, because he's not hearing, you know, he's not hearing us talk. You sort of hear everybody talk like that. So we finally had to go for, I think it was called an ABR test. It's a hearing test where they have to put you to sleep. So it's a last ditch hearing test because they have to put you have to do it in the hospital, did it all children. They have to put the child to sleep. So there's risk involved in that. But that's the only way they can tell. They measure the brain waves from the ear to the, you know, whatever. I remember we did that, long story short, we did that, and I was just scared, just putting a child to sleep, you know. And I remember, I've been in hospital settings before, so when the doctors came out of the operating room, I'm looking at them coming down the hallway, and I could tell if things went right or wrong by how they're coming out of the operating room, and they were all smiling. So I was like, oh my God, he's good, you know. Doctor told me, I'll never forget, it was a female doctor, male doctor, and it came up to me, and my wife was there at the time, and he said, he has the most perfect hearing we've ever tested. He could literally hear a pin drop, and he could be able to discern what type of pin it was. He's perfect hearing. We've never tested anyone who's had that person before. I was like, are you kidding me? I had to ask him again. I was like, really? I was like, this makes no sense. This makes no sense. He can hear better than anyone. And so that resolved that one. You know, ear tubes went away. You know, after a while, they just fall out. But that therapist that I had, she was crucial. She told me, she said, don't let him watch TV. And so he's 13, so this is going back now almost 3 years. This is a while ago. She said, don't let him get deeply involved in electronic devices or a television. So I'm like, why? She said, because he's never going to learn to interact with you. He's going to get to that TV and he's going to be on the TV and he's never going to develop the ability to start to interact with you. So you're like, let's do this first. She was right. She was instrumental in that. And I didn't, you know. But I think that was, and so, like, was the diagnosis traumatic? Not really. We had him at a doctor at All Children's around that time. And, you know, this is kind of, 10 years ago, it sounds funny to say 10 years ago was early days, but kind of was early days.
Yeah.
A lot has happened in 10 years
yeah.
with autism.
Oh, yeah.
A lot has happened in 10 yeah. years. And the doctors were like, we can't really tell. We know he has autism, but like he has other stuff. We can't really tell what it is. He was about 6 at that time. You know, like bring him back and like, I'd like to see him in a few years. I haven't gotten back there, but his hearing has developed where, I don't think it's a hearing, it's the association of the brain and what you're actually hearing. He always heard, but he wouldn't respond. You know,
yeah, it's could call like an audio processing.
Right. Like yeah. We could call his name, and sometimes he would respond, sometimes he wouldn't. You know, it's same way now, sort of, you know. Sometimes he'll respond, sometimes he doesn't, but I know he hears.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Watch an episode of Daniel Tiger, mm-hmm. and then they have a character called Daniel Tiger that has autism. Mm-hmm. And he's like a little boy that looked like Che. Looked like Che.
He does.
Is his name Jay on it? Maybe something else, but I just remember me learning more and more about autism from every source, including Daniel Tiger. And there was this one scene where the little boy joined the classroom and the teacher said, hey, he may not respond. It might take him a moment to process what's been said. And then from there, kind of interact. Or, you know, if you say, hey, pick that block up, 30 seconds later, you pick the block up. So then I was like, is that, so then, you know, it was little things. I was like, is that what's going on with Jay? He's not seeing it, he hears it, but however he's processing it, is there a bit of a delay between, you know, hey, go pick up those toys and then it's just me trying to figure out this world from through every source possible, apparently including Daniel Tiger. So.
Well, there's so many instances like that. You know, are they hearing me? Are they listening? You know, why aren't they following directions? And it's hard to discern what's autism
yeah.
and what's them just being a kid.
Right.
It's so hard to tell right. if they're sitting there just going, nope, I'm not doing that. Yeah. Uh-uh. Just ignoring you. Like get lost, old man. Nah, right. I'm not doing that.
Right.
Just being a stubborn kid. And that goes with even some of the, you know, outbursts and behaviors that are associated with autism. It's so hard to tell what is autism and what is just them being a kid.
Yeah.
What's them just acting out, testing boundaries and, you know, pushing the limits just to get what they want.
Right.
You know, so it's a hard juggle.
That's true. That's very true.
You know, what can I give into, you know, to kind of help, you know, control an outburst that is related to right. their autism and what is them just.
It is a challenge. I think it was the grandmas or, you know, kind of like the older, wiser people where if they were around us and they saw me trying to explain Jay, then, and, you know, like, for example, the grandma would be like, hey, she should be a little boy. Huh. He should be a 4-year-old. That's what 4-year-olds do. Like, you know? And then, it's so, like, to your point, it's like, all right, when does just little boy and the doing the little boy things begin or end, and then when is, you know, maybe his challenges of being on the spectrum begin.
Right. Maybe they're just being a pain. Maybe they're just being a boy.
Right.
And a lot of the running, jumping, the rough play, especially for boys, is it just them?
Yes.
Exactly.
It's hard to know how to separate.
I think, you know, too, not only audio processing, but when I get, like with Daniel Tiger, you know, delay. Okay, Elijah has apraxia. So there's a delay in the connection for him to do the thing that you want him to do because he can't get his body to do it. And a lot of our children on the spectrum, they have a form of apraxia, but Elijah's apraxia is a standalone diagnosis because he also has severe apraxia. So I have to be mindful when I'm like talking to him, like, oh, he's going to take a moment because, or I need to motor coach him through something because his brain is not going to make the connection, and motor coaching will help build a new neuron to make him overcome his deficit.
What does that look like?
Yeah, so motor coaching, like, I'll give an example. Like, when we go for parkour and he feels unsure about himself, I can just tell. It's just how he's standing and, like, how he just looks like he's taking a little bit longer to process. And I'm like, okay, get your foot up here, foot, up. And I'm, like, motioning and doing it with him. So I'm modeling it. I'm vocal telling him what to do over and over again, and he'll do it. I'm like, yeah, good job. So just keep motor coaching. And that has been very helpful. We see a special OT just for apraxia, and that's what they have trained me to do, is do motor coaching. And it has made a lot of difference in his regulation. I mean, once we figured out that piece, the regulation has gotten so much better from knowing his apraxia better.
Yeah.
So just, you know, I didn't know about Daniel Tiger. I've seen that episode too. I was thinking, I bet that little boy has apraxia when I was watching it too, because there is a delay, and there's a lot of delay in that.
I will tell you, part of the, you know, when I was listening to both of y'all's journey, you were saying things that reminded me. I think initially, when he was born and when we got the diagnosis, I wasn't worried because there was just so much to take in. And I'll never forget we went to this, I guess, renowned doctor who, the first initial, when he was two, diagnosis. I just remember, like within 5 to 2 minutes, she was okay. Yeah, he's level 2. Like, his mother,
you just met him.
You just met him.
Well, hell, you just met him. Like, she was like, he's staring at the lights and he won't look me in the eye. And yes. And I'm like, but, you know, I guess she was renowned for a reason. Like, she knew. Excuse me. And so, still didn't sink in. I was like, whatever. And I went to church one time and there was another lady whose child didn't speak. She's like, oh, like you said, we drained his ears and now he's talking. I'm like, so in my mind, there were still these things that were just going to happen. And we just haven't discovered it yet. But the most worried I got was receiving the second confirmation through another doctor, and hearing the quiver in my wife's voice when she asked the question, you know, is he ever going to be able to go to college by himself, right? And I could tell that she was trying to figure out what his life was going to be, and that was probably most sobering for me. And then it probably was also most, I'm going to say, hurtful, for lack of a better word, but just in that moment, seeing her worry and concern, that became my worry and concern. And so it was now two people. It was her mental, and then his challenges. And then I kind of felt the weight of the world, right? Not to keep making it about me, but just to, you know, there's just a lot going on in here. There's just a lot.
That's true. It is a way to the world, though, and it is. So, you know, I feel it as he gets older and older. I feel it more and more every day. You know, like I said, there was no real one time. I mean, I think the first clear time was, you know, the initial diagnosis, like at early steps. But still, I was like, I knew he was a little bit different. He just he didn't interact with the other kids. He didn't. It was almost like he was deaf, you know. I think maybe for a short amount of time, he might have, you know, with the one on the ears might have been hard of hearing. But yeah, though, it is, you know, it weighs on you. I think as they get older, it weighs on you more because it becomes more pronounced,
mm-hmm.
you know, because more pronounced. But with my son, like, he has progressed a lot. Like, he's developed a lot. Like, he loves looking at you. He'll look you right in your face. He loves looking at you, you know. He also is in his own little world. He has his own little things which he concentrates on, you know.
Well, that eye contact he's making now, that was just a change over time.
Over years.
Making eye contact, now he does really well.
So he was always developmentally delayed, also with the autism, but I've seen more of the developmentally delayed part ease away as the years have gone by. But yes, in the beginning, he would not look you in your face. Like, if he had a toy he was playing with, he would be concentrating on that toy, and it would be nothing that you could do to interfere with that, you know. Yes, no interaction with anyone else, you know, very, very limited. He was always to himself, kind of. But as the years went on, that opened up, you know, that opened up where he would interact with you, you know. Now he's totally opposite from that. You know, he's in his own little, he likes to do his own thing. But he,
you know, the reason I ask, anytime I come across folks, especially, you know, if they have a son or daughter with autism,
mm-hmm.
and they're older than Jay, I'm always interested in your journey, right? You know, mm-hmm. I've spoken to folks, you know, 13-year-old, my son's mm-hmm. 7, 20 folks with 18-year-olds, 21-year-olds, and I hear stories like, oh, yeah, and so-and-so's going to college. I'm like, really? Or so-and-so just got their own apartment. And, you know, and it just encourages me.
Right.
That there is a journey, and then I just want to talk to them, like, okay, what were they doing this at age 7 or this? And when did that milestone hit? And I know everybody,
right,
and every child is going to develop how they develop. But
right.
I don't know. I find it very encouraging.
Yeah.
To talk to other folks with other
kids. So many complexities.
There's so many different cases and so many people, and all of their journeys are so different. And like you said, you know, some of them are going to college, and the ones that are nonverbal, you know, started speaking at, you know, a certain milestone. And I think we all kind of get in our own head, you know, that, well, it's not meeting that milestone. Well, so-and-so's nonverbal started talking at this time. I like to put myself back in the mindset. If any question like that comes up, you know, what's this going to look like? And you start getting that worry or doubt, you know, is he going to start talking? Is he going to be able to do this? Maybe. However it works out, is how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I just try to make the best of just every single step along the way.
Sure.
And, you know, if something fantastic happens, awesome.
Right.
If it doesn't, awesome. You know, whatever we end up with, just make the best of it.
Yeah. You know, that's correct. Once in a while, someone might ask me, like someone close to me, someone I work with or something. I remember one time a person asked me and said, do you think you'll ever talk? And I thought about it for a second. I said, probably not. I was like, but he talks with his eyes. Mm-hmm. Yep. He talks with his eyes.
Come on.
So like, he can let you know what he wants or how he feels. But now we all use speech, but now he doesn't. So I always tell people, I'm like, I have to figure out his communication. Like, will he talk? Probably not. But, you know, he talks, but not in speech. So I got to figure out what that is. Like I can figure out 99% of what he's doing and what he wants and all of that kind of stuff. Of course, spend some time with him.
Through the eyes and the body language.
Right.
We've had a long journey with that. And you had mentioned something earlier about like the TV, the electronics kind of thing. I think that was one of my most surprising breakthroughs is that's when a lot of the communication actually did start to develop because when he was watching YouTube, he really liked music, stuff like Daniel Tiger and all that, and phonic songs, you know, alphabets, numbers, that kind of thing. And we started noticing something strange, like, why does he keep doing that? Like, why does he keep playing the same couple seconds over and over and over again?
Right.
He was speaking through the videos.
Wow.
Yeah.
Memorized videos, timestamps, how to find each video, and was communicating through the video, and that half a second, that one word in that video, and would go to a different video and find that spot to tell you.
Like J is for juice.
Yeah. You see that?
J is for quesadilla.
That takes a
I'm thirsty, I'm hungry.
Right.
And
right.
When we realized what he was saying, what the hell?
Right.
Like, oh my God,
he's
doing?
Right, that takes a complex series of events for that to take place.
I have seen all these videos. I know and I memorize what all is in these videos.
Right.
Yeah. And I have figured out how to bring this to you and say, that's what I want through this. I can't make my mouth do it with words.
That's extremely complex.
That was one of the most amazing.
You know, I'm glad you said that. It was similar to us where, do you know the lady? She's older now. She has autism, but she's written books. And she's, I think, crap. It's like inventing some type of cattle.
Grandin Temple.
We saw a video, and then I think Grandin Temple was like the latest person that my wife saw that said, hey, keep electronics and TV away from your kids if they're autistic. And I like what you said about, you know, the interaction, but I got to tell you, My son learned, I believe, his shapes, his colors, his numbers. He was counting to 1 and 200 in Spanish.
Yes.
From his tablet, just because he kept flipping languages. I noticed early on with his tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put him, I'm like, oh, that's a mistake. And I put it back to English.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come back and he's on Japanese. And he'd pick up Japanese words.
Mm-hmm.
And our Spanish speaking friends were like, yeah, your son's counting to like 86 in Spanish. I'm like,
wow.
The numbers you say, because I don't know. Right. So my wife and I would have this debate, like, hey, you take the tablet away. I'm like, he's learning things from the tablet.
Right.
Let him, it's fine, right? So we're on the opposite ends of that because I saw him learning.
Right.
And you all remember that 80s movie Short Circuit?
Mm-hmm.
Short Circuit started talking.
Yeah, Johnny Five's a lot.
And just from like little clips from TV shows. Mm-hmm. I compare my son to Short Circuit because he will just give you a clip from a TV show, but it's also sometimes fits into the moment.
Right.
Yes.
So it's in context.
Yeah. So there's a video game or some cartoon he watches.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll imitate it, right? So there's something where, for example, on his tablet, the characters go, ew, that's disgusting, right? And he will do it in the moment where he needs to do it. So if it's a toothpaste, he doesn't like. Brush his teeth with like cucumber Tom's toothpaste. Ew, that's disgusting. It's yucky. And he's just giving you phrases from the tablet, from the cartoon.
Right.
Fits into the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday I growled at him and he goes, oh, it's a rhinoceros or something. And he's just you know, like, where are you coming up with this? And it's just key words that he's heard or phrases, and now I notice he knows how to mesh those perfect little quotes or quips into them.
Yep.
And I'm like, my son is Short Circuit. He is the new 2025 real life Short Circuit. It just reminds me of the movie.
Yeah, you're right. They learn a lot. Yeah, my therapist was like, those were the really early days. And she was like, in order to get him over that hurdle, that initial hurdle of being able to communicate with you, she was like, don't let him get immersed in that.
Yeah.
So that was years ago. And he has, I got him an AAC device around the time when I met you. Actually, around that time, a little bit after that. And so he took to it right away. Like, I gave him this tablet. He figured out how to, he's scrolling the cartoons. And he knows how his thing, my son's thing is he loves the Christmas music. So he's playing the Christmas, he did it at Christmas time, but now he continues to do it. So he plays the Christmas music all the time. And then there's certain things that he likes. There's these guys who dig dirt or something, and they speed it up and they show you how they're building castles or whatever they're doing. He plays that over and over. And then a lot of times he'll get frustrated and throw it down at night when he's getting ready to go to bed. And he always goes to this page where he's looking up, where is the nearest Publix? And he's always looking up things, how to bake cookies, different things. I'm like, is it random? Or, like, does he know what he's doing? I'm like, I'm guessing he kind of knows what he's doing. But I watch him. I even took a video of it, of him scrolling. He was scrolling the cartoons. He's going. He's finding one he wants. He goes back to it. But he took right to it. But like you said, they learn a lot of that. It's a great learning tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great learning tool. You know, it's a
good. It is a very good learning tool. I do like electronics to a degree. I mean, of course, the screen time should be monitored, which we all probably agree on that. But it is a great tool, a great learning tool. And with any kid, though, any kid doesn't need to have, like, a lot of like,
there's a time and place for all of that stuff.
Especially right before he goes to bed. Like, if his brain is hyperactive, he's not going to sleep as well.
Yeah. Speaking of balance, that leads me into my next question, guys. Being, you know, a protector, you know, provider, an advocate, and what was your unique challenge as dads? How did you strike that balance?
I can tell you, I haven't. have not. It's one extreme for me, right? It's either extreme protector, provider, you know, which is a default. You know, they're just trying to be a good dad, be a good husband in the way that I know how. Right? So I thank God for my wife. And I don't want to generalize or stereotype. Fathers, if you're listening, there's fathers out there that are they're doing a lot. You know, I do struggle saying, am I not doing enough, right? So on the one hand, you know, as a provider, I think, okay, I'm going to provide this infrastructure, this house with running electricity. If something goes wrong, I'll get fixed, this vehicle so that, you know, my wife can take him to school and maybe if the oil light's on or if the tire is flat, you know, I'll keep that going. In my mind, you know, I'm doing these things in the background that allows for the environment, safe environment, grow. But then on the front side of it, you know, my, you know, husbands and wives out there, you get into your arguments. It could be a strain on the relationship of, are you contributing? You know, hey, I'm with Jay all the time. I'm going to take him to school. I'm taking him to swim lessons. I'm taking him to horseback riding. I'm doing this more than you're doing, right? And I know it's not a competition. I get that. But the balance is hard for me because I want to be a good father. There are times where I'm like, am I being a good father? Is this enough? I know I can learn because I've seen it. So then it's like, am I, you know, are you taking enough time to train him? Are you not, go help him throw, go help him balance a bike, which are things I need to still do. Help him know how to blow his nose. It's just hard for me because I just also, some space that I need to mentally clear my head. And I don't know that I have anybody to talk to about that or to share with, right? So it's just, if it's a time to be the bad guy because I'm absent, because I'm at work 60, 65 hours a week, or I'm just looking at pictures of the birthday party, that I did go to. Oh, he's riding a horse. I've never seen that in person. But I've seen the video clip of it. I'm happy that that happened, and I missed some of those, but I do struggle with knowing whether or not I could be better. So to answer your question, it's the extreme version of those, and I don't know that I know how to enjoy the moment. I'm so, and fathers, if you're listening to this, if there's any of you that are just wound up tightly like me, you're not alone, because I can't, if I take him somewhere, if it's on me, for me, it's okay, let's start this. And then if I get there, let's end this. If I go to take him to Sky Zone, my first mission is to get him dressed and get him to Sky Zone. And as soon as we get in there, I'll put time on the clock. And I'm like, if I can get through 60 minutes of this, great. And then I try to make it to those 60 minutes. And guess what, fellas? I don't enjoy any of the middle of it because I don't allow myself time to say, oh, look, he's jumping and having fun, because I am wound up tightly. And that's a flaw of mine. I cannot enjoy the moment. I am just watching him. Is he going to bump into somebody? Is somebody going to bump into him? Is somebody going to give him a nasty look? And then I'm going to have to give them a counter nasty look. Right. I am just on guard. You would think I am part of the Queen's men who stand out guard at the palace. Like, I'm just there, bodyguard, ready to intervene, ready to keep him from jumping or hurting himself. I am not in the moment at all. I am just there. Let me catch you if you fall. Let me pick you up, back up.
Right.
If people are giving you a hard time, I'm going to intervene. And then if you were too emotionally unregulated, Jay, I'm going to take you out of here. And now you're crying. But I don't know what to do with that, so let's just get you in your seat, and I'll get you your McDonald's ice cream cone, and we'll go back home. And I'm sure my wife, by comparison, makes that look easy. Just completely easy. You can just go to the YMCA swimming pool and enjoy, and he runs around. And if I try to do the same thing, I'm stressed. I am just on edge. And then I'm going to feel guilty that I need to go get the me time, whether it's the golf course or beer in the garage, or am I just hiding from my family? I don't know. So,
no,
but I don't want, I'm not trying to, but I have to get this together too.
Yeah, you need to decompress.
That makes sense, what I mean? So there's guilt. There's some guilt there when I do try to find the bit of me time so I can kind of
regroup. A tremendous amount of guilt and all of that. You're right. Like, I'm good on being the protector part. I'm not good on, I'm a single dad. So I'm good on, the dad part. I'm horrible on, any other part. I'm always, like you said, I'm always on edge of, whatever. A lot of times I'm on edge. I've gotten better with it. I've gotten better with, especially in social settings. Sounds bad to say, but I just don't care. When I go to social settings or different things, I know where to go. I know the good places to go. I know where I can go, where I can't go. But when I'm out and about, I kind of stick to a certain routine. I know the routine to stick to. I know what's going to work and what's not going to work, like I said, I'm good on being, keeping the cars going, keeping the house, going.
Right.
But I often find times when, I don't have any decompression, I can't decompress. What I'll do, since I don't have any time, is sometimes I'll just decompress with him. Like, we'll just get out and we'll just go someplace. And we'll just kind of decompress together, sometimes just sitting in a car, going for a car ride.
Right.
A lot of times that works really good.
Yeah. The car rides are,
yeah,
that's probably my most, biggest bonding time. He'll take a journey. We've seen movies together, but yeah, it's sometimes just, maybe it's the simple things.
Right. Right. And, that's another thing too, So when I was younger, you don't have the patience. So now that I've gotten older, I have a lot more patience. And so I'm like, I think of like people, how they look at me. I'm like, here's this guy. He's in the right lane. He's going 29 miles an hour in a 40-mile-per-hour zone. Because I'm like, I'm just trying to keep the vehicle between the two white lines. That's success. Sometimes if he's going bonkers and nuts, but you know, a car ride, you know, my son, he likes to tear paper, he likes to tear wipes. And so I didn't realize it, but we'd be going down the road and there's people honking at me. I mean, they're honking at me. He's slowing them out the window. And I didn't realize it, Chuck. I didn't realize it. And now here comes the defensive part, the dead part. I'm like, I'm saying to myself, like, I'm talking to the other people who are driving, but of course they're in their cars. They can't hear me talk. But I'm in my own mind talking to them. I'm like, did you realize that paper comes from trees? And trees are from
the outside. Yeah.
And he's like, just throwing part of the tree back onto the ground.
Yeah. Back to the
right.
Once it came.
Yeah.
Right.
Just giving it back.
Right. You know. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. You know, I'm good at being a protector. Like I said, I'm not good at anything else. I'm good at that. And then, like you said, a lot of times I can forget to enjoy something. You know, it's different settings. If I take them to a park, I can kind of enjoy that because you can kind of go in the park and do that. If I go to, like, say, a restaurant, I might not be able to enjoy that as much. I mean, I can, though. I only go certain places. Like, I know where I can go. You know, I know certain places that work well.
Well, see, to your point, that's where I think I need my own therapy, because I'm wondering, I don't know that I can enjoy anything, any moment in time, and so I'm wound up that tightly just with him. You know, I'll come back from golfing, my wife goes, oh, did you feel better? Did you enjoy yourself? I'm like, no. I played horribly. I'm stressed out. I'm so like, where can I?
Because I'm thinking about all these other things.
Right.
But you spent 2-3 hours doing that thing. Yes, but I'm worried about all these things that have to be.
Do you have the answer? Can you help us? What's the balance? Because I need the answer.
I don't know. I don't know that there is a balance.
There isn't. Right.
Trying to find. And the hardest thing is what works for you.
Right.
You know, what actually, you know, you love to take rides. Elijah, that is his favorite thing, sitting
really?
In the middle seat, and especially in the Jeep, right in the middle, all the really? Windows up high. He absolutely loves it. He'll just throw his tablet down. Yeah. I hate being in the car. Absolutely hate driving. I hate driving. I hate traffic. And so it's kind of, you know, whenever I can, yeah, take him for a nice little ride, and that thing, he's usually, you know, 10-15 minutes.
Take
the back roads and then just go back home.
They love that. Well, you know,
why he'll just stop what he's doing, and
if he's overstimulated with something else, you know, if she's not there, hey, let's go for a ride. And I mean, it doesn't happen very often because, like I say, I detest driving. Well, at least in Florida, it's become.
I think we can do a lot of driving for work or something.
Yeah. Right. And the other thing is being around crowds of people. And like you said, you know, taking them around, especially crowds of people, stuff like restaurants and that. And I know Elijah, he's super active. Loves to be up, running around, jumping, playing, and then in large crowds, it puts me in that just survival mode.
How do you deal with that? You know, if you go to a large crowd, you know, Ruth and Elijah, maybe it's a carnival or a festival or something, are you able to enjoy the, you know?
Absolutely not. Yeah. I can't enjoy a crowded or congested area by myself.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
But then when I'm with them, I'm always in that crisis mode of, you know, where am I? What are the exits? You know, where are the bathrooms? What are the dangers? You know, are we somewhere where there are cars, golf carts, people on bicycles, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Am I going to have to strangle a cyclist to death because they ran my kid over? That kind of stuff.
Right.
And certain places, certain situations, how you were saying it, at Sky Zone, you know, people give, there are still a lot of those people that give the nasty looks.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're one bad day away from, you know, side checking somebody.
Right.
Pause for a second.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, so with Mr. Elijah coming in, that's just to my ears, right? Like it's just my life in background, and it's comfortable. And you know, I'll tell you, we went to the dentist, I think it was last week. You know, it's just, he won't let anybody in his mouth. He'll let me brush his teeth. Although the one time I tried to prove it to the dentist that he'll let people brush his teeth, I was like, look, he'll let me eat it. So he had to go under anesthesia last week to, you know, just to have his cleaning and to get x-rays. He had to be put to sleep, like you mentioned. You never want to see that too much.
Right.
So I'm probably stressed out about that a little bit, but I'm also encouraged that we could get through the dental exam because I knew he was going to be under anesthesia. I was like, well, at least we'll know it's going to be a success because we have to use, you know, unfortunately, these medicines that put him to sleep, which, by the way, that's a whole other thing. That was $1,000 just for the anesthesia.
Yes, it is.
And I'm like, is that once, you know, cleanings twice a year. So when we get there, I'm going to set the stage for you. It's early in the morning. We're going to be there like 8:40.
Right, because he can't eat.
Right. He couldn't eat. I'm glad it was in the morning because he couldn't eat or drink or anything. So we get there like 8:30, and they're not ready for us for like another 45 minutes. Like, we have to.
That's not.
So my stress is like, my wife's comfortable. I have to be within 3 inches of him. Like, what are you about to do? So when we get, so we walk in, here's the counter. You all, there was the young ladies behind the desk, the dental aides, the office. I'm talking, hey, we're checking in. My wife comes in. My son's there. So he runs off, and my wife's like, oh, he knows where the playroom is. I see this door open and he's in behind them some kind of way. And this is like a sitcom movie. And I'm like, is that Jay? Like, and they're facing me, so they don't know he's gotten in. Like, he's infiltrated this dental office. And he gets in, he's looking at me and he's looking around. And I'm like, hey, God. And she runs after him. And then there's this black curtain that leads back to the dental rooms where the different procedures are going on. He disappears behind the curtain.
Oh, no.
And she, now she makes her way, now if she's looking around, he went through the curtain. She goes to run in. She goes to go through the curtain. The curtain pulls down to the ground and falls down. I'm watching all this unfold. I'm still standing at the desk. Now the curtain, now I see her through this doorway, and I'll see him run, and she follows, and then he'll come back that way. And this was a sitcom comedy show, followed by, like, Dennis running around. And then you hear people go in the back going, it's okay. It's all right. No, don't worry about it. And I was just standing there, and I looked at the ladies. And I go, how's your morning going? I said, we are an absolute comedy show this morning. You know, and they were just kind of looking at just commotion.
Right.
And finally, they wrangled him. And I'm just like, you know, and then there's the husband and wife. Like, I thought you had him. Like, you didn't have him. He wasn't. And she's like, he's fast. And she's right. He is fast. So I'm trying to, you know, keep his attention for another half hour. Lo and behold, it gets away from me. The whole thing happens again 30 minutes later. He finds another door to go in. He runs back there. I'm determined to get him before he reaches that black curtain. He's faster than me. I remember what I have on my wife. I said, let me gently move the curtain and go back there. I pulled the curtain down. Part two. What? And then followed by me coming back to the sitting area. My wife goes, see? That's so easy.
Told you he's fast.
That's another trick. That's another trick. Very fast.
Out of breath, and it's just so. And that pretty much sums up our life and what it's like to go out with Jay.
Right. It can go awry, and it can go smooth.
Mm-hmm. But I don't want to not take him to restaurants or take him out because I feel the stress and pressure of containment. He should be able to go out and explore.
Right.
So. There's that balance there again.
You know,
yeah.
Onto that, I'll take my son anywhere, but I only go, I prefer to go to the places that I already know that will work. Like, I have my own parameters, and I kind of know what will work. Restaurants where the tables are a little bit more spaced out, where we can be to ourselves. So it's sort of like, I know kind of what will work for me, and I'll go to those places. But anytime I have to go to a place which I haven't, like a military operation, I haven't scoped out the place yet, that's when there's a high probability that things will go wrong. You know, I remember one time, it was, my family wanted to go to a particular restaurant. So long story short, we go there. When I walked in, I looked at the place, like you said, always on guard. I saw the tables and how close they were together. And I said to myself, this is not going to work. But I didn't want to spoil it for everyone else. And I didn't want to self-sabotage. Right. We sit down, and lo and behold, before our food comes, my son jumped up. And he stole a man's food behind us. Took it right off his plate.
I'm laughing because that's what Jay will...
And my heart just sank. It was so fast. It was so quick. And I had to apologize. And the person took it all right. But I had to apologize and go through the whole ringer of that.
Right.
But I said to myself, then it reinforced it. I said to myself, I knew this wasn't going to work. And I was like, yeah. I was like, this wasn't going to work. But I will go anywhere, but I only go to the places that I've been to before.
Yep.
I know how it works. There's certain perimeters I look for. I have to know what kind of worked for me. Yep. And it can still go awry, but, you know, that's just kind of how I deal with it. And to what you said earlier, I've kind of become immune. Like, yeah, you get, I don't know. I think, yeah, you get dirty looks sometimes. I mean, I don't think not so often.
They're rare.
Or maybe I don't register it anymore because I'm always on guard to guard.
Right.
Being a protector.
I've learned to block it out.
Yeah,
I don't get like inquisitive looks.
Right.
I see it out the corner of my eye, but my main focus is on him, so I don't.
Right. You know how I reason with it? I say, they'll figure it out. Like, I figured it out. they'll figure it out.
Who cares?
Or, right, you know.
Well, I like the way you think about it. Right. I don't get to the part. Well, maybe I'm getting there. Kind of the let it go. Like, I can only control what I can control.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? All of those bad things can be erased by one kind thing that a person does. Mm-hmm. I remember we went into Panera Bread one time, and that's another spot that I like to go. So I'll go to Kohl's, which is to get his sneakers sometimes, or to see kind of what sneakers. That's all we've experienced, buying sneakers, right? Buying footwear.
Oh, yeah.
Went to Panera Bread one time, and we're standing there online, and I forgot what Noah was doing. He was maybe singing or whatever. And it was right around Valentine's Day, and they had like those special Valentine's cookies or whatever it was.
Sure.
And this lady came up, I guess she had already bought it, and she came up to us, and she says, I want to give this to him. She says, he's so beautiful, I want to give him this Valentine's. And I was just like, floored, I was just shocked. I was like, I never forgot that. I was like, you know, she just, anonymous just went away. But one kind thing can erase all of those, bad things. Right. It one, you know what I mean? They're going to happen sometimes. I don't know if they happen more when they're younger or more when they're older. I don't know.
I think sometimes, too, when you give it out, too, like when you give out,
right,
and you see people struggling, and they, I think you get it back.
Right.
Multitude of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I always try to help people when I see them when they need help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You won't go out often? You won't go out to the restaurants and
shy away from it, but we
not a whole lot.
I cook a lot.
Yeah.
Just like
right. That's what we're trying to
do. Right. The way we grew up, it was going out to eat was a very rare occasion. It was always, you know, home cooked meals, the whole family around the table kind of thing.
Right.
You know, every night, you know, when you know, dad got home from work, you know, it was kind of that thing. And, you know, Sundays, you know, grandma and grandpa's, that kind of thing. So it was all
right
at somebody's house, big communal thing.
Yeah.
So,
that's what we still do.
Yeah. Where we grew up, all the restaurants were 45 minutes, an hour away.
Right.
In rural Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just south of Columbus area. So
there wasn't much to choose from if you wanted to go eat.
Yeah. And most of the time, you know, Red Lobster and Olive Garden were considered fine.
That was
right.
Yeah.
That still is.
I mean, back in the day.
Right. Yeah.
But then.
Too fancy for my blood.
That was the place to go. Like the once a year fancy dinner for our family.
Well, and I mean, even still, the cheddar baked biscuits are delicious.
Yeah.
But, you know, you eat Red Lobster and then you come down here and you have some good Caribbean lobster or some. Really good sushi or something like that. Yeah. Like, nah, forget that.
Yeah. Right.
This is worth that.
Yeah.
So, we still do the, you know, kind of family dinner kind of thing at home.
But we don't shy away from going out to eat. We'll take it.
Not really.
Right.
But like you had said, it's usually certain restaurants, certain type of restaurants that have a certain atmosphere.
Right. You know it'll work.
Figured out what will work, what has, you know, seating arrangements.
And, we prefer and booths.
Booths are
exactly
are
right.
Great.
Exactly.
Booths you can corner them.
Yeah.
I made that mistake. Jay likes breakfast, pancakes, eggs, bacon. Now I can get that in.
Right.
The booth, like you said, found out you get tables and chairs. He's up for grabs. The whole restaurant's up for his grabs.
Right.
The booth strategically, I can put them on the inside.
Right, and you sit next to
him. You can't go anywhere unless he tries to go to the table.
Right.
It's just
which happens.
Pretty strategic.
Yeah.
Right. You have to think. And like what I do is that, like if I'm going to that type of place, a breakfast place, let's say if it's Waffle House, I go in the parking lot and I look first. If it's crowded, I'm not going in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to work. But if it's not crowded, I'll go in. I'll try it.
And you kind of have to take into account what type of restaurant, what's the wait going to be like?
You know,
what day of the week is it? What time of day am I going?
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be a place that you have to sit on one of those awkward booths that
you can
only fit four people on?
Right.
Am I going to have to sit there for
not gonna
5 minutes? Nah.
So how do you guys bond with your child? What activities do you guys go and do with your child? And I know it's different, you know, because there's, you know, they're on the spectrum and bonding will look different. So how do you guys do that?
I'll go. Mine is easy, I think. I kind of generically fell into an activity of just going out with my son. Like, I've always realized that he needed to get out. Like, he doesn't like being indoors. He doesn't like being cooped up. He likes being outside, outdoors. And it was a point, like, years ago, he came to me, like, with his shoes. Like, he's there, like, in his underwear. He's putting on his shoes. I'm like, nah, it doesn't work. I'm like, you know, where are you going? Like, you put on your shoes and you're in your underwear. I'm like, you know, this doesn't work. And he wanted to go out. That was his way of telling me, you know, without speech, I want to go out. And I know I need these devices on my feet to go out with. And so you should be able to figure that out. But evidently, you've done to figure it out. But, you know, it's what we want to do. So I started going out, walking. There's a park near my house, and we would just go out and walk around the park. And that would be our kind of bonding. And then we just developed into doing more and more of that. And that's where I kind of decompress. Like, a lot of times I don't get the time to go out like I want to. I was always like a cyclist. I always was into bikes and riding bikes. I couldn't figure out how to get him to ride a bike. I couldn't figure out how to teach him how to ride a bike. Like, can he balance? Can he do anything physically? Yes. He can do anything physically, so why can't I teach him how to ride a bike? You know, I don't think he would get the concept of stopping or knowing, like, where there's no concept of fear, there's no concept of, you know, what to do. So I was like, you know what, I can't get this all figured out. I'm feeling like inadequate now. I can't get it figured out, so we'll just walk. I mean, everyone knows how to walk. He knows how to walk. So we just go out walking. And so that turned into our bonding. That turned into our thing of bonding. And that's how we just progressed in that. And I think that's my biggest thing with him. I'd push him, you know, through hurdles. And I was like, okay, he can do it. We would go out to the beach and we're out there walking on the beach. And, you know, we would go different places, different parks, do different events. We started doing events, like we did the turkey trot, you know, and that was fun. It was really fun, you know. Sort of like it's non-competitive, having fun. And he did well in the crowds. He did well in the crowds as long as he's doing something. Like, he's got a purpose. He knows we're walking, going somewhere. And I guess even though you're in that crowd and that's in that particular setting, it's not like a commotion like it is, like, if you're in a crowded place, like, let's say, a loud restaurant, you know, where it's really confined. But I guess the difference is you're not confined, you're outside. So just generically, I just fell into that that space of us going out walking. You know, like, if I'm going somewhere with the family, and they have to go to this building over here for an hour, and I know, like, I can't go in there. Or it's a place where, you know, it's quiet. So, you know, it's not going to be socially acceptable to have a kid in there screaming their lungs out, you know. And I'm not going to do that to people, you know, and to him and to me. So we'll walk around the parking lot. And, you know, and, like, I guess maybe, like, to what you say, like, people might look, they'll get it after a second. They might say, oh, guy's walking around in a circle. He's walking in a circle. He's doing his son. He's walking in a circle. But, you know, they'll get it after a minute. Yeah. They'll figure out what we're doing, yeah. You know. And you can just be generic like that. That's the way kind of, I would say, that's the most intimate level of bonding that I do with him.
The simpler things.
Yeah, it's a simple thing. It doesn't cost any money.
We used to bond over a lot more complicated things, like, you know, whether it be music or, you right. know, the certain activity. But it seems like now just the some of the best times are swimming. Loves to swim.
Right.
Loves to swim with me. And rough, Elijah, rough play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Extremely rough play. Likes to wrestle.
And, that's great.
Just, you know, very, very rough. And, you know, I'm going to be stronger than you, old man.
Right, right. Just getting that energy.
Not today.
Right.
Yeah. We'll always grab his hand when he gets home, drag him to his room.
Now,
yep.
Do you feel after you guys do that wrestling, is he more calmer?
Absolutely.
Did that help him?
Yep.
It helped him regulate.
Helps
wrestling.
Aggression out. And
right.
And he gets some of that pent-up energy
right.
out.
So it helped him.
Absolutely.
Right.
And because he is super active.
Yeah.
And loves to run, loves to
right.
exert himself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's got a lot of strength and energy and you know, whatever it is, the pent up anxiety, just, you know, I need to burn off this energy. And so that really, really helps him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun because he's, I can't wait until he picks up something like jiu-jitsu or something like that, because he's intuitively, he knows how to move his body.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So no physical limitations or. Not, in a bit, you know.
Not really.
Right. Physically.
He can.
Yeah.
Right. He can
he can move around.
My son is pretty strong and loves to wrestle too. To the point where he'll say, Daddy, let's wrestle.
Okay.
And I'll, you know, so we'll mock wrestle, or sometimes that just means chase him. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It was the simpler things. It was taking a ride in the truck. Hour, just go around somewhere, that's bonding time. when I came home yesterday, my wife was watching something downstairs, you know, and I grabbed a beer and I said, I'll be upstairs watching TV with Jay. Because I knew he was going to follow me upstairs. And she goes, oh, look, he's right behind you. I was like, I know. So when I come, when I come home, he's going to follow me. And then we just sat together. I'm watching something on YouTube. Jay's sitting next to me with his tablet, but he's near me. Well, he just wants to be near me, so I count that as bonding time. Now, I would say, am I bonding enough? I don't, you know, just by the fact I'm away from home, I'm working a lot of the hours. So there, I could bond more, but it's in those moments where we're hanging out together. If I go lay down on the bed, he's going to want to be there, like, on the bed next to me.
Right.
So that is those, you know, those quiet moments. I like to take him to, he loves swimming. You know, we have a new YMCA open up near us in St. Pete on 62nd and 4th Street. They have a great water park, so he loves that. Me taking him to do things he likes, and he likes jumping. So that means maybe trampoline parks, which he knows are out there, which stress me out. But I can handle the YMCA a little bit better because I can be with him and help him work on his swim technique. It is kind of the simpler things. I will take him to a playground. There's been a couple times now, I know we're about to pass a playground on the way home, and I'll say, hey, you want to go to a playground? I'll say, no. And I feel bad for breathing a sigh of relief, because the times he does go, is this bad, or I prefer the playground to be empty?
Huh?
If I see an empty playground, I almost, even if he says no. Like,
we are going.
You're going to slide, you're going to push you on the swing, and we're going to let you run around. And then when I see people coming, I'm like, oh, am I okay? It's fine. And then I just worry, like, okay, you're going to push that little girl down by accident, you're going to bump in, or is something going to happen? I'm going to be stimming very loudly. Do I need to explain him to folks I don't know? I don't typically.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a little kid that will say, hey, you know, we asked him to play, what's wrong with him? He didn't answer us or something. My wife may have had more of those counters than I have. She'll say, oh, no, he's fine. He could hear you. You know, he may not speak back to you right away. I maybe try to avoid those, but you can't always.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I don't know if I'm being selfish and trying to find activities that he likes and go to these places at a time when there's nobody else there. So did you?
No, that's not.
You want to go to Sky Zone? Okay, it opens up at 10. We're going to be in the park like 9.
Right.
Well, I'm not selfish at all.
Those situations are better because that's another instance where it's you two bonding.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's more of that, you know, you and him time.
Yes.
Yeah. So he likes
without any distractions.
Yeah, loves the water. And like I said, I can do more of it. I don't think you know, the times where I try to balance myself with my own me time, you know, there's the thought like, well, this is time to be spending with him, but it also grounds me enough to keep going. You know, it's, you know, there's that balance thing again.
And that is the hardest part, and we all have to find that some decompression time, because if we are there, are we being the best version that we can be at that time? If, you know, if that 20, 30 minutes of just decompressing, going and doing something, you need to go for a walk, you need to sit and listen to music for you know, a half hour, or, you know, drink a couple of garage beers.
Yeah.
You know, if you immediately try to jump into everything because you're so overwhelmed, it makes your interactions and your experience with the wives and the kids worse.
Yeah, it does. I will say there are times where, you know, shout out to all the mothers out there. And that's not a stereotype, because I know there's fathers out there rocking it too, but it seems in my experience there's just a lot of mothers who are doing this at a level that I can't, because there's just this patience and they're into activities, and Jay does a lot of the activities because my wife, Kanika, said, hey, I'm taking a horseback ride. I don't know that I would have ever thought to do that. He ice skates. She found a teacher that works very well with kids with sensory challenges, horseback rides, swim. When we did swim lessons, I'm going to renew. And I'm like, well, how? When I grew up, you did swim lessons and it was one and done. Like, it was like,
right.
My mom put me in 6 weeks of YMCA swim lessons, and that was it. I never did it again. And my wife kept renewing it. And I'm like, how many is we're just going to do this indefinitely forever? Just swim lessons every week? When does this end? When does it end? And I'm like, okay. But it was her perseverance to let him do those things. We tried on gymnastics. I don't know if I thought to do that. You know, the swimming, the horseback riding, karate. So she's really led the way with Jay. And she makes sure he gets to the birthday parties. I will make a point to make a special guest appearance at one, maybe two birthday parties a year. They stress me out. And when I go, so I don't know how mom's doing it when I'm not there. She'll just tell me stories like, oh, he totally ran and grabbed icing off of the other kid's cake before I could stop him. Or grabbed a cupcake and they weren't ready for the cupcake.
How common thing.
And she'll tell me the story, but I'm not there. But she experienced all that. So then when I go there to the birthday party, I'm me. And I'm not enjoying this party, by the way. Because I'm just watching him. And catching him before he grabs the other kid's cake, or before he, and I'm like, am I preventing him from having fun? You know, my wife's talking and laughing. I'm like, Jay, you know, and I'm like running because we're at a neurotypical birthday party.
Well, those are hard enough, but hard enough as it is. Right. And every time there's an activity with that, the thing in the back of my brain that I hear is, hey, do you want to go learn the names of 40 people you'll probably never see again?
Yes.
And, you know, talk about who knows what.
I am, by the way, grateful to the birthday parties because they don't happen often. And when I used to throw Jay's birthday party when he was 1 and 2, I would have beer and wine for the parents. My wife was like, what are you doing? You don't need to feed them. I was like, yes, these parents are bringing their kids to the birthday party. So she would say, hey, you want to go to Bobby Joe's birthday party? I'm like, okay, they're going to have drinks. I don't know. It's not about that, James. I'm like, yeah, I know.
What kind of people are there?
Should I bring a bottle of wine to this birthday party? The adults. I'm thinking of the other parents.
Is this 4-year-old's birthday party, BYOB?
Or I'm just building a grant for me. Is this okay? And I was like, just come on. Let's go.
All right.
I don't know. So shout out. I say all that to say shout out to all the parents that are doing it well. But a lot of the mothers I've encountered are just really holding it down and leading the way. And I know my wife really does. I mean, my son gets the exposure that he does to do these activities because of her perseverance and her making sure that he has these opportunities. And so I'm grateful for her to do that. So I can be the support system I will be. And yes, I need to attend more of these things myself. But that's why if there is a day, where if I'm at home and I'm not working, it's like, I will look at it and I'm like, go call your buddies up, go somewhere, go eat, you know, because it's me saying, I know you've done it all week. I would feel better, or maybe it relieves my guilt, if you go with the girlfriends and have a night out of town. So I do want that.
Yeah.
You know, go somewhere so that I know you've been doing this. You know, go get de-stressed. And I'm happy the time she does. I'm like, this, do what you gotta do. Jay and I got it. We're chilling.
All right, guys, thank you so much for being on the round table today. This is the first one, and I'm so glad I got to hear it from the dads.
Thank you. Like to do it again.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. This will be the first, but it's definitely not going to be the last.
Right.
And we'll just have different topics, but I wanted to have you guys on first.
Sorry, too.
That was good.
Our experiences.
Right.
There's a lot of similarities in our...
A lot of similarities.
Yeah. Yes. And if there's any topics that you guys would like to try and bring up, let me know. And then we can turn that into an episode as well.
Yes. That sounds good.
And for the listeners out there, if you guys have any topics that you would like me to cover on any of the dads roundtables or the moms or any of the roundtables, let me know. Email me. I'm going to put that in the description below. Also, I want to let you guys know, too, if you want to be a part of these roundtables, I will be doing them virtually as well. So feel free to reach out as well via email, and I could have you on the podcast as well. All right. That was so powerful. These voices, these stories, they are reminders that we're all on a path of becoming, you know, what we're becoming, what our child's becoming. As you take in today's and as you take in what we have shared with you guys today, I want to leave you with this. You know, the Heavenly Father sees your child. He sees you and your journey. With all the twists and the turns, it has a purpose. Thank you for finding the time today to join us on finding your identity in your autism journey. If this episode touched you, share it with someone who needs it. And if you're and if you're not already connected with us, come and join our community at Your Autism Journey, where the real conversations meet faith, advocacy, and love. Until next time, keep up. Keep showing up, keep speaking up, and always remember, we rise together.